People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this edition of PTR, it's not politics as usual, at least not with Maureen Taylor running for the Detroit City Council.
Part of the fight that we fight in this campaign and through the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization is how to profile this fight from our point of view. We're not trying to profile it from the enemy's point of view. And the enemy's point of view is that it's the family's responsibility. It's the mother's fault. It's the lack of a father. It's because the welfare recipient, if that's what we're talking about, she's got 1 or 2 or 3.6 children and two different fathers and all that kind of, you know, morality issues that people want to throw into it. But that's the position and that's the viewpoint of the enemy. The viewpoint that we're trying to represent and the viewpoint that we manage in our quality of life campaign is that the responsibility for what needs to happen for overall society is the government's responsibility. That's why we pay these jokers money. There are rights that should not be questioned, and we've got Americans questioning whether or not some people have a right to live inside. We've got Americans confused over whether or not some folks should have medical care based on the ability to be able to pay for it. We have some Americans questioning whether or not people should be able to eat based on their ability to have money to access food. And these are not debatable issues. These are issues that if you live past the birthing process, you have rights. And those are, I mean, certainly we're trying to build a campaign based on more than surviving. We're trying to thrive.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. It's called the Quality of Life Campaign, and Maureen Taylor is running on that platform for a seat on the City Council in Detroit, Michigan. She was interviewed by our Great Lakes correspondent, David Apsey.
This is David Apsey, Great Lakes correspondent for People's Tribune Radio. We're interviewing Maureen Taylor. She is a draft candidate for the Detroit City Council, which is an election in November 2001. She's running on the Quality of Life campaign.
This started as a complete and total draft effort. I have been resisting running for political office for a number of years, but my involvement with the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization and my involvement with the National Welfare Rights Union has brought a certain level of profile. And because of some of the organizing work that we've been involved in over a number of years, there was a draft movement that started. And the more I resisted, the larger the quote-unquote draft opposition became, until folks just insisted that we gather up petitions and begin to get them signed in an effort to get the voice of the voiceless heard. Committee members come from various areas. We've got folks from disabled workers in Ruth Williams and some of the folks that she works with. We got people who are housing experts from public housing developments. Like Mrs. Grace Byers, we have people who are organizers in the community and human resource specialists like Vanessa Parks and Crystal Reese. We have persons from labor like General Baker and Keith Mickens and some of the folks from that camp that are working very hard on our behalf. We've got individuals who are homeless. Folks have come to this campaign with food stamps just before we changed over to the electronic benefits transfer card and brought $2 or $3 worth of food stamps and said, please use this toward the campaign. This is all we have, and if this will help, let me give up food stamps. So we've got veterans, and we've got seniors and youth and children and welfare recipients and homeless people and organized folks, unorganized folks, teachers, electricians, and all manners of individuals who are involved in this campaign. But everybody is united around this issue of a quality of life campaign that speaks to the issues of food and housing and affordable housing and a standard of living that we're all trying to maintain. I think that the people of the United States have a certain expectation and a right, an inalienable right, I believe it's phrased, for a certain standard of living to be met and maintained. We have a small, intolerant group of folks that own 90% of all the wealth, control the power, at least that's what they think. And then we have this other 90% of us that are trying to figure out how to divide 10% of the pie that's left over, over and over and over again. And what we're talking about in terms of a division, we have, there are rights that should not be questioned, and we've got Americans questioning whether or not some people have a right to live inside. We've got Americans confused over whether or not some folks should have medical care based on the ability to be able to pay for it. We have some Americans questioning whether or not people should be able to eat based on their ability to have money to access food. And these are not debatable issues. These are issues that if you live past the birthing process, you have rights. And those are, I mean, certainly we're trying to build a campaign based on more than surviving. We're trying to thrive. But yes, there are rights, and that's part of what this Thrust to the Quality of Life campaign is based on.
We're talking with Maureen Taylor. She is running on a Quality of Life campaign for the Detroit City Council, November 2001. Do we have a right to education? What can we do about the education problems in Detroit?
Dave, one of the problems that we have with education and so many other areas that we're struggling with across this nation is the American people have a slow grasp of technology, what technology means in relationship to changes in technology to the economy, and what the social consequences are when things change. Dodge Maine is an excellent example. Dodge Maine was a very large factory that employed thousands of workers. It's been closed a number of years now, yet the kinds of cars and the numbers of cars that are being made through that particular entity have doubled. You know, we don't have fewer cars being made. General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, Daimler, Chrysler, and the added different car manufacturers, they're not in a slump. They're not making fewer cars, they're making more cars. And the point is that with technology, you don't need as many hands, you don't need as many bodies to do as many things. With this rise in technology, at one time, technological advances used to enhance labor, but technology now replaces labor and the laborers. And so what we have, you know, just hordes of individuals around the country, around the world, that are not needed for employment, not needed to work. And so if you have that kind of circumstance, if these people are not needed to work, then why should you feed them? Then why should you house them? Then why should you clothe them? Why should you educate them? Because they can't do anything to make money for those folks that are in power. The crisis of education is mandated by these changes in technology and mandated in the fact that the folks who own all of these activities and own all of these technological mills and factories and all these industrial plants and the ability to be able to manage technology, they don't want to share. And because they don't want to share, we have hundreds and thousands of children that can go through 7th and 8th grade with the 2nd or 3rd grade reading level. All of these problems that we're talking about, education included, can be traced back to the natural ties of what happens when you have a few people that own everything and everybody else owns practically nothing.
Does the family bear some responsibility to the problems that occur in the education? And how can the society solve the new problems that the predominant family now is a single mother with kids who has to probably work to survive, to make the house payment, the mortgage, the utility payments, etc.?
I think the question is excellent. It's asked on a regular basis. Part of the fight that we fight in this campaign and through the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization is how to profile this fight from our point of view. We're not trying to profile it from the enemy's point of view. And the enemy's point of view is that it's the family's responsibility. It's the mother's fault. It's the lack of a father. It's because the welfare recipient, if that's what we're talking about, she's got one or two or 3.6 children and two different fathers and all that kind of, you know, morality issues that people want to throw into it. But that's the position and that's the viewpoint of the enemy. the viewpoint that we're trying to represent and the viewpoint that we manage in our quality of life campaign is that the responsibility for what needs to happen for overall society is the government's responsibility. That's why we pay these jokers money. We're paying them taxes and we're paying them to manage, not to manage to keep themselves in office, not to manage to keep themselves in new suits and new clothes, not to manage to keep themselves in PT Cruisers that come out every year. I mean, we're talking about a group of people that we pay to live better than we pay ourselves. I mean, who's stupid in this scheme of things? We're paying folks to have medical insurance, to have dental insurance, fly wherever they want to fly. We pay for that. They don't have to use stamps. They don't have to pay this $2 and $3 a gallon gas like we are. And then they live like kings and queens, like royalty, and we live like the servants. Yet when they question why in our servant families we may have wayward children, or we've got violent tendencies, or we've got these manic depressive kinds of idiosyncrasies, well, we should be crazy. We have every damn right to be nuts by now, because we don't take into account a point of view that should come from us. It is not that mother's fault, and it's not that absent father's fault. People don't leave and hurt each other because that's what they want to do. We're in a fishbowl. We're in a tank. And we're fighting one another for these crumbs because that's the only way we can think. What this campaign is talking about, what this campaign is trying to get people to see, is that there's a way out. We can unite. We can organize to get what we need. We can have schools after school. We can reduce class sizes by taking our children out and putting them in another classroom where maybe there's a bunch of chairs and no teachers there. The community has to stand up, and that's what our campaign is about, a grassroots movement from the ground up to try to organize and get people to have the vision to see that we can organize to get what we need to have. We welcome people to the Quality of Life campaign. We need to organize to get what we need to have.
We're talking with Maureen Taylor. She's running on a Quality of Life campaign for the Detroit City Council, November 2001. This is People's Tribune Radio. Is there any effect on your campaign from the fact that Mayor Archer, our fairly recently elected mayor, he's been in there 2 terms now, he's not going to run again for re-election? Does this have any effect on your campaign?
None at all. There are enemies, and there are, women understand this question, how these wayward husbands and boyfriends come and go. They just come and go. You turn the door, there's another one. And if those relationships and those love affairs are based on opulent things, they're based on things that are not substantive, then you do have this revolving door kind of concept. But the mayor leaving means absolutely nothing at all, except that it might stir more political activity, because there is a mayoral race that's quite significant going on in the city of Detroit. And it right now is being called, it's being tracked, and it's being organized by the press, by the mainstream press in the Detroit area. They have contacted many people's minds by saying this candidate or this other candidate are the number one and the number two candidates in this race. It doesn't matter what the citizens may be thinking of, but they've pretty much chosen it for us. So to that degree, where the backlash will be, I'm certain that there will be citizens that will be upset by that kind of premature choosing. There may be more political activity and whatnot, but other than that, these mayoral elections, they don't mean anything to our campaign.
What about the fact that for the city council now, we have many new candidates for city council this year? Is this year a different year than any other year in a campaign? Do we have more candidates than normal?
4 years ago, Dave, when the city council, every year or every 4 years when city council seats are up, all 9 are individuals have to run for positions again. They have to run for a re-election each time, so it's not a fait accompli. Each person has to rerun every 4 years. Last time the election came up, there were more than 140 individuals who had originally taken out applications to run for council. Then through a process of weeding folks out, could you get enough petitions to get on the ballot? Then you had to manage to do well in the primary. Then you had to manage to do well in the general election. So there were some attrition factors that went into it. And this time I understand that there are more than 160 applications, and the same process will go on. But I think, Dave, that's an indication of the level of frustration that people have. I mean, things are so bad that we've even got a guy whose name is Christmas, and he's running for a city council seat. This is his second time, and last time when Christmas ran, Christmas lost the election. And it's an indication of how people are so frustrated, so fed up, so demoralized by what's going on. Everybody wants to try to get involved. So we've got barbers and hairdressers and fishers. And, I mean, we've got all kinds of folks that are running, and they should be, and we all should be running.
What would you change about the living wage ordinance in the city of Detroit? And what comment did you have, for example, that the Salvation Army does not want to cooperate with the living wage ordinance?
Dave, I'm certain that it's not just the Salvation Army. Salvation Army raises this issue of not wanting or not being able to cooperate with the living wage amendment because in their views, in their analysis, that it will cost so much money to raise people's standard of living and whatever the salary is to the quality of life issue, the standard of life issue that we're talking about, that they would actually lose money and it would cost them too much. But I would guess that all organizations, there are probably many organizations that have some conflict about the living wage ordinance, but there's a bigger picture for us. The living wage ordinance, the amendment, is an excellent one, and I think it speaks to what it is, the proper direction. But, Dave, because we work so closely with the Welfare Rights Organization, we have some statistical information that's alarming. And what we found is October the 1st of 2001, some 11,000 welfare recipients will be kicked off of welfare permanently. And this is the first of that wave of five-year recipients, individuals who were on assistance August 22nd of 1996 when that rascal Bill Clinton signed the welfare reform laws. Now, this first wave comes off, as I say, in October. Statistics and surveys have been done over these last 4 or 5 years tracking these individuals who are coming on and coming off welfare. And here's what the survey numbers have found. The average individual welfare recipient that's come off of assistance now earns a salary of about $7.18 an hour, and that's with 3 children. The National Poverty Index says that in order to maintain a poverty-level standard of living, a woman and 1 child, the woman must earn $9.50 an hour in order to be at the poverty level. So if we're talking about welfare recipients coming off with 2 and 3 children making $7.19 an hour, we are still not trying to kill poverty. We're trying to kill the poor. What that has to do with the living wage figures is that the living wage figures are not up to par yet. We're going in the right direction, but we have to go much further because we've got some 22 million welfare recipients who will be coming off of assistance across this country on October the 1st. And the living wage figures may not have anything to do in terms of a safety net to try to help that large group of folks that will be coming off.
So you feel that the living wage ordinance, what are the levels of wages that are offered in the living wage ordinance at this time?
I don't know what the specifics are. There are living wage numbers and living wage figures that are being offered in multiple figures and multiple numbers in many areas. Now, the last figure I heard was seven and $8 an hour. I've heard higher than that. I've not heard less than that. And the $7 and $8 figures that I heard in terms of a living wage, I got from some friends of mine that were in Mississippi. And my guess is that living wage ordinances across the country are at various numbers. And that's kind of frightening because that means whatever living wage figure could be here in this state of Michigan, maybe it's someplace else in Mississippi and in another place in Georgia or Alabama, and yet even a third figure in Chicago or California. But the point is that a loaf of bread in Michigan costs $1.65. As long as the living wage figure, whatever it is enough to buy the bread, maintain affordable housing, and allow a person to have medical insurance, health insurance, education is accessible and whatnot, then that is a wage that we can live with. What happens, though, if you're not working at all and you're unemployed? How is the living wage going to help? We're not opposed to the living wage. I think it's an excellent amendment and excellent thought. We just need to develop more work in that area.
How does this your campaign correlate with the Labor Party? The Labor Party had a campaign to amend the Constitution of the United States to make a reasonable living standard a right for the human beings in the United States, the inhabitants of the United States. How does this correlate with your quality of life campaign?
I'm an active member of the Labor Party in the metropolitan Detroit area, and my organization, Welfare Rights, and myself included, we are in total support of that amendment. We still need to develop more work on that. You know, the living wage amendment came out of a number of conversations with folks that were from organized labor and very strong and very committed individuals. The work that needs to happen on the living wage amendment, however, has to be expanded to the point that we figure out how does that help migrant farm workers, transitory workers, and other workers, and maybe folks that are unemployed. How do we get everybody figured in that? Our campaign supports an adequate income for everybody. Even if you don't have a job, people are deserving of some kind of dollars and whatnot. And I don't think that that would be out of line with the living wage campaign, but I think that that's par for the course. Everybody should have some income, some money in which to be able to deal with areas of survival.
So what issues during your campaign, what issues will you refuse to compromise on?
There are no compromises needed in this campaign because the issues that we're talking about are issues that are germane and are important to 95% of the folks that we represent. Now, if there's somebody that comes forward and says, Maureen, would you and members of your campaign like us to build a summer home for you, a winter home for you, a fall and a spring home for you like we have, well, we'll listen to that kind of conversation and find out how many of us can live in all those homes in all those different areas. If we can find somebody that wants to make our campaign into something other than what it is, you know, we haven't been approached by that so far, but my guess is that because we're so committed and our feet are on a path, I don't think we're going to have any compromise kind of language put forward. The only thing that I can think of is that already we've got some folks that have commented about the importance of African Americans being involved in this campaign and taking it away from a class perspective. You know, we're real attentive about any attempts to try to make this an African-American campaign or a woman's campaign or a light-skinned lady with short hair campaign. We're not trying to do identity politics. This is a campaign based on a particular class of people that need to be represented at the polls. Other than that, we can all get along.
So you're representing the people, for example, the seniors who are having their water turned off, the people who are going to got kicked out of the public housing just before it was knocked down just weeks ago in Detroit, etc. So this campaign, in essence, is not only a campaign for city council. This is a campaign for this is a long run campaign.
That's why we call it the Quality of Life campaign. Is once we are involved and once we're successful and victorious, and if we are lucky enough to get a seat, and it's a couple other folks running, a very close colleague, Charles Simmons, with a very close viewpoint. If we're able to maneuver a seat on city council, we're talking about starting at organizing and helping to organize a grassroots movement that is perpetual. It will go on. It will continue to build. It will recruit new people. It will continue to grow. And, I mean, right now it's several thousand people that are involved. We're going to access more individuals and more individuals from that group, that pool of people that you're talking about. So before it's all over, we're going to get most of the seniors, and it's a lot of them in Detroit. Before it's all over, we're going to get most of the youth. It's a lot of them in Detroit. Before it's all over, we're going to get most of the welfare recipients and the homeless, and it's a lot. And if we can build it here, we can build it everywhere, and that's what this is about. We're going to take this country back from those folks that don't want us to have anything. So this is what the Quality of Life campaign is about, perpetually building a grassroots movement from the bottom up so that we can organize to get what we need to have.
This is David Apsey, a Great Lakes correspondent for People's Tribune Radio. We're talking with Maureen Taylor. She's running under the Quality of Life campaign for Detroit City Council. Is a good quality of life affordable for Americans?
Yes. We have long taken the position in the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization and in the National Welfare Rights Union that we build everything that's here. And there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to participate in the luxury and the convenience and the safety and the comfort of what it is that we build all our lives. We have so much money. I mean, this United States of America is built on the concept that we're the quote-unquote greatest country in the world. If you go to Iowa, the travel brochures say we can feed the world, and this is what they print with the wheats and the grains and the flowers and whatnot that they produce there. If you go to California, the tour package says we could feed the whole world just with what happens in the valleys in terms of the fruits and vegetables. If you go to Florida, they print up the same brochure, we could feed the entire world. So then, Dave, if that's the case, then the question has to be asked, why isn't the quality of life of everybody that lives in this United States of America better? Why is there a child going to sleep hungry? Why is there a senior that's eating once a day? Why are there these issues on whether or not you can eat a food or dog food, or maybe not eat and pay your bills, or maybe not eat and get your medicine? Why are we doing all of these things? If the first pill that Lilly Pharmaceutical Company makes costs $4 million in terms of research, that means pill number two should cost 3 cents. Pill number three should cost 3 cents. And the kinds of monies and whatnot that are being made and the kinds of greed and whatnot says that it's all right for some folks to live high on the hog, but the rest of us seem to be living really low on the pig's foot. And our campaign says, no, we've got to diversify our concepts. We can't go down these single-issue politics. We need to be organized on the basis of what we have in common. We can attain, we can reach a quality of life. All we have to do is sharpen our vision. Where are we trying to go? And we have a lot more in common than we have that separate us, and that's what this campaign is being built on.
This is David Apsey, Great Lakes correspondent for People's Tribune Radio. We've been interviewing Maureen Taylor, running on the Quality of Life campaign. And thanks again, Maureen, for your interview.
Thank you very much. In case there are folks that want to reach us on the Quality of Life campaign, please call area code 313. The telephone number is 832-0618. Victory is ours. Thank you.
Thanks to Maureen Taylor and David Apsey for helping to make this edition of People's Tribune Radio possible. And thank you to all the radio stations, both here in the United States and internationally, who air People's Tribune Radio. If you're a listener of these radio stations, please call them up and thank them for providing a venue for independent programming in the face of an ever-consolidating media landscape. That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Thanks to the overwhelming response to PTR in our first year, the program is now available twice monthly and on the internet at www.ptradio.org. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the same technologies of robotics and computerization that are being used to displace millions of workers worldwide is used for the benefit of the planet as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League, our Speakers Bureau, or our other print and audio publications, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. That number once again, 1-800-691-6888. My name's Mike Thornton. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.